Hey, welcome to Weekend Watchlist, a look at what's screening and streaming, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. I'm Mia, there's Slim.
Hello.
And together we'll dig through what's dropping this weekend, last weekend, recent trends on Letterboxd, and we'll also take a peek at our own watch lists. All under 30 minutes or your money back.
Mia, I'm back. I saw a ton of great feedback from folks listening. They sent emails into podcast@letterboxd.com that they said they loved hearing you and Mitchell together. If I can quote, their chemistry is off the charts, Mia. That's what I heard last week.
That's what you've heard?
That's what I heard.
That's really what you've heard? Wow.
That's real life. That's real life.
Real life. Wow. You know, I miss Mitchell. I do.
I miss Mitchell too.
I miss Mitchell.
Mitchell, come home.
Mitchell, come home.
Mitchell was probably up until 4 a.m. watching some random 4K that they forgot that they owned. And then they fired that up.
Yeah.
So I'm back. I'm here to pour cold water on all that chemistry. This week, we'll chat Where the Crawdads Sing. Big release this week. Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris, Don't Make Me Go, community reviews, and just a quick note, just a reminder that our dear, sweet Marcel the Shell is expanding into more theaters this week. So please, please, please go see that if you can.
Go check out that little guy. He's sweet and he deserves the support.
He does.
You know what's not so sweet, Slim? Murder. Let's talk about Where the Crawdads Sing, directed by Olivia Newman. It is in theaters on 22,000 watch lists. Wow. Here is the synopsis. Secrets are buried just beneath the surface. Abandoned by her family, Kaya raises herself all alone in the marshes outside of her small town. When her former boyfriend is found dead, Kaya is instantly branded by the local townspeople and law enforcement as the prime suspect for his murder.
Dun, dun, dun. This is on 22,000 watch lists, so I'm a noob. I'm a Where the Crawdads Sing noob.
Honestly,
I didn't know that this was like a book. Did you? Are you following this book, the history of this book?
So I used to work at Powell's Books up in Portland, the largest independent bookstore in the country. And I sold about 10 million copies of this book. So the 22,000 watch list number kind of adds up for me because there are a lot of people read the book. I'm not sure if necessarily they're like diehard fans of the book, but a lot of people read it and are like, I should see the movie. I read the book.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense to me. It had that Reese's Book Club sticker on it.
Oh, you know,
yeah, the coveted Reese Witherspoon book club sticker. That goes a long way.
Mm, what about that Taylor Swift song? You heard about this? Swifties? There's like a, she wrote like a song just for the movie?
Oh, is it?
Did you know about that? I'm breaking news. I'm breaking Taylor Swift news to you on Weekend Watch
List. I feel like it was in the back of my head that was going on. And I was like, oh, maybe she's friends with Daisy Edgar Jones because...
Could be.
I feel like because her boyfriend is Joe Alwyn, who's in Conversations with Friends by Sally Rooney, which is related to Normal People, which Daisy Edgar Jones stars in. So he's part of
she's part
of the Sally Rooney universe. So I think that
Sally Rooney cinematic universe.
Yes, exactly. So this adds up a little bit.
I don't think I've seen Daisy Edgar Jones and anything until I watched Under the Banner of Heaven this year, that TV series with Andrew Garfield, which I liked.
Yes.
The other thing, like, so if you Google this movie, there's like a little bit of a potential scandal, alleged scandal. Did you read up on this about the author and her husband? My word.
It seems like there might be some alleged murder cover-up going on here. No, nothing confirmed. We're not going to break that news here. But
just Swift news.
Zoinks. I do think it's kind of almost baller to write a book about like murder when you may have helped your stepson cover up a murder.
It's pretty bonkers. I saw the article pop up when I Googled this movie. I guess it's starting to bubble up now that this movie is out. In the 90s, her and her husband had filmed like this ABC TV show in Zambia about protecting animals from poachers. And in the interview on like literally ABC, they show a poacher getting shot, but they never say who was doing the shooting. And the deal is the husband and wife team left the country after that. So that has nothing to do with the movie per se, but I don't want us to be in a position where this movie comes out like, oh, I can't believe you didn't bring up the alleged murder of these two. So,
yeah, but we got to say something.
What about some reviews? What are you hearing about this movie from the community? Any vibes?
Oh, well, our buddy, Brian Formo, he has a review. All the issues I have with the movie are surely from the text, particularly the only black characters being there solely to assist the Lily White Marsh girl without having any scene slash life outside of that role. But the filmmakers are responsible for some of their own, such as making it all look like a CW show with perfect makeup, perfect hair, etc. Yes, that was something I was thinking while watching the trailer. I was like, this girl's supposed to be feral. Okay.
I watched the trailer. It looks very nice. The CW vibes is a funny point. Anthony wrote, I met Daisy Edgar Jones right after seeing this, so it's an automatic win in my book. That's a pretty nice little moment there, seeing that movie and then meeting her afterward. Holy cow.
Yeah, I'd watch it with my mom. I don't know. She's probably read
it. Sure. All right, so enough about murdercore. Let's move to nicecore. Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris, directed by Anthony Fabian, in theaters. This is on 3,500 watch lists right now.
Oh, let's get those numbers up, you guys.
We need
you
to bring it up. Wait until you hear Mia's thoughts on this
yeah.
movie.
Yeah, yes.
A new adaptation of Paul Gallico's much-loved novel about a cleaning lady in 1950s London who falls in love with a haute couture dress by Christian Dior and decides to gamble everything for the sake of this folly. Tell us about it, Mia.
This is a lovely story about following your dreams. So Leslie Manville stars. She is the titular Mrs. Harris. Mm. She goes to Paris. Word on the street. It is true. She does go to Paris and she meets Isabel Huppert. So the cast is awesome. The cast is stacked. So it's like Miss Pettigrew meets Emily in Paris, meets Paddington, meets Phantom Thread.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's a big mashup, but it all works. Like, I'm not kidding. I really enjoyed it. I cried in the theater. It is a warm, comforting watch. The character of Mrs. Harris is so three-dimensional. You are rooting for her to get that dress. Like, the whole time, you're like, she needs to get that dress she loves, even though it's silly. Mm-hmm. It also has a lot of really interesting themes about, like, pro-unionization and workers' rights, and it's a really lovely, cathartic, escapist fantasy where the powers that be take workers' needs seriously. It's like, really, there's a lot packed into this little rom-com that's actually somewhat profound while also being a feel-good watch.
Love it.
So, like, I really, truly loved it, and I would see it again in theaters because it was that warm and special.
Is it time for nicecore to take over? Is it time?
Yeah, the world is bad right now. I'll say it. It is bad out there. And it was really lovely to just like go into a theater for 2 hours and kind of just escape from all that and root for this woman to get this dress. So
Chris left a review. The only good nicecore. Alexa also left a review. I too would risk it all for a dress, but neither of those and definitely not by Christian Dior. The nicecore vibes, it reminded me of, I mean, I don't know if it would be considered a nice score, but the positive vibes I got when I left Marcel the Shell, like I felt like I could do anything after seeing that movie.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And Marcel's also made me cry. So I really like, yeah. I like that kind of bittersweet, melancholic feel good because I feel like it's more realistic to what life is like. I like movies where it's about discovering like the positive and the negative, I suppose, because you got to have the negative to have the positive.
You gotta.
And that's what Marcel and Mrs. Harris have in common.
Hopefully a bunch of people added that to their watch list just now. Check it out.
Yeah, we're going to bump it up to 22K watch list.
Bump it up.
Bump it up. Let's move on from feel good movies to feel bad movies, which are just as important. We have Don't Make Me Go, directed by Hannah Marks. It is streaming on Amazon Prime, 3.4 average and 3.5K watch lists. When a single father to a teenage daughter learns that he has a fatal brain tumor, he takes her on a road trip to find the mother who abandoned her years before and to try to teach her everything she might need over the rest of her life.
Don't Make Me Go. I remember seeing this poster in our Letterboxd Slack. There were some like early vibes in our Letterboxd crew Slack, and the poster is dynamite. And so I was able to get access to this I think you were as well. I really like Don't Make Me Go. Feel bad, feel sad. I was getting some Coda vibes from this movie, at least initially, in terms of like a family coming to grips with something and maybe it unites them. And that's definitely the case. But there is a scene later in the movie in a field that legit knocked my socks off. Unreal acting, unreal writing, great moment. I had some slight issues with decisions made in the third act, but overall, really enjoyed it.
We're burying the lead that John Cho is the star of this film. He is the father in question, and he is like a beautiful, goofy, karaoke singing dad. And I mean, that's worth it just for that. Agree about the rocky third act. Mia Isaac is incredible. She plays the daughter. She will also be co-starring in Not Okay alongside Zoe Deutsch and Dylan O'Brien, which comes out soon as well.
I do want to spotlight Flynn's review. Flynn, who works on the Letterboxd social team, beautiful review. I won't read the whole thing. I definitely recommend people click through and read it. But this movie will make you want to hug your parents so tight. And if you're a parent, it will make you want to hug your kids so tight. So I would say watch this with your parents or your kids. But I'm warning you, there are a lot of tears to come with this film. So that was a very positive review from Flynn.
And then Sam also has a review. I started crying during the opening credits because I knew this was going to F me up on several levels. This was not good for my hypochondria. That's all I'm going to say.
So Hannah Marks, Don't Make Me Go, 3,500 watch lists. Recommend if you want to just let loose and start weeping.
Yeah, go see Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris and smile so much and then come home, watch this movie and weep it out.
Let it all hang out. It's healthy for you to let it all out. You got to. So those are the main releases this week. I do want to look back at last week's releases. You guys had a jam-packed show. My God, last week. Thor Love and Thunder dropping slightly to a 3.3 average. Emma Hodge left a review. I really don't understand all the hate this movie is getting simply for being funny. Are you expecting art and cinema in the 367th MCU installment? Don't be mad at Taika for understanding the assignment. These films are not meant to be taken seriously. Just sit down, eat your popcorn, and try to have a good time, Mia.
Emma, I'm not sure I agree with that, but...
Letterboxd Legal is now stepping in front of Mia. Mia, please? Oh my goodness. I think the bloom might be off the rose for this kind of Marvel movie. We'll see. Robert left a review. More like Love to Blunder. Am I right? My gosh. Robert,
scathing, go off. Scathing review from Robert.
Both sides of the blade, I think, went up an average, 3.1 average, and Marina 3.5 average. So very positive for those two releases from last week.
We love to see Claire Denis going up.
How about Luke's review? Personally, for both sides of the blade, personally, this ranks below Titan as it doesn't have enough ass shots of Vincent. Not enough ass shots.
Yeah, they could. I mean, there was some, but we can bump those numbers up.
You got to bump them up.
That is the theme. Bump up those ass shots. Bump up the watch list for Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris.
What do you want to spotlight from the last week?
Well, I briefly mentioned this on the pod last week. Fire of Love is coming out. I finally got a chance to watch it, and it is gorgeous. It is a documentary about two volcanologists who are in love with each other. They love each other, and they love volcanoes, and it's beautiful. I will read a little excerpt from my review. French new wave rom-com tragedy documentary about a volcanologist power couple made me weep in the AMC, a starry-eyed reminder of romance and science's unlikely propensity to intertwine, told with sizzling 16mm archival footage and lyrical voiceover narration. I thought it was Jennifer Jason Leigh the entire runtime. I really did. I was convinced. I was like, this is so cool. Like, I get to listen to JGL. That's Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Too many abbreviations.
I got to listen to JJL, and then at the end it said, narrated by Miranda July. So, oopsie, but Miranda's cool too. Oopsie.
That's great. Yeah, a lot of buzz from last week from you both about this movie.
So yeah, please check out Fire of Love. It is really one of the best movies I've seen this year.
Mm, okay.
I also got to go to the Mike Lee retrospective. It has made it to LA. So they're screening a bunch of Mike Lee films over here. A lot of them are new restorations as well. So I caught this new restoration of Life is Sweet, which I had not seen previously. And I'm having a great time familiarizing myself with more of his work. I'd only seen Happy-Go-Lucky and Naked before this, and I really enjoyed both. So I'm super excited to start seeing more of his films. He said that this is his least favorite of all of his films. Life is Sweet, I mean. And I don't think he should be so hard on himself, because this was still like a really, really lovely family drama.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really impressive when your quote unquote worst film is better than most people's best.
Yeah, I have never seen this either. I just want to add this to my watch list. Mike Lee, we touched on a little bit on Jack's Letterboxd show episode.
Secrets and Lies,
which I'm going to be seeing soon.
I will be seeing that soon.
All or Nothing. I have All or Nothing, Mike's movie, at 5 stars on Letterboxd right now.
Oh.
Timothy Spall, the king.
Yes. Yeah, he's in Life is Sweet as well.
Yeah, that's another, he's really funny. The main reason why I added to my watch list, because I saw him in that backdrop photo. Love his stuff when they work together.
I added this to my watch list because David Thewlis is in it. So yeah, we love our English character actors.
One thing I'll spotlight, another release this week that we just didn't have room for, but I will make a little bit of room now, is She Will, which is releasing in theaters and video on demand this week. I dug it. It's an aging film star goes to a Scottish retreat after having a double mastectomy, but the entire area that they're staying at after the surgery is literally built on the ashes of witches that were burned decades previous. So she and her nurse start to experience strange things from then on, which is an amazing idea for a movie. Like this aging film star that's just been through the ringer, and she starts to just feel empowered by what's happened on this land. It looked awesome, very moody. They do some very interesting editing things in the movie. It's somewhat messy, but I still liked it. So I'm probably maybe 3.5 stars for She Will. And I think it's like presented by Dario Argento was like the first thing that I saw on the screen.
What?
Yes. And this feels like, I said this before, but this feels like a Shudder movie. And whenever I say that, I mean that as like a big positive. I'm a Shudder subscriber. This is like a Shudder movie that I would love to stumble upon one weekend with my wife and just have fun watching a new horror movie. So very cool. Recommend it.
This looks cool. I'm adding it to my watch list
right now.
We are bumping those numbers up.
So usually in this segment, we check in on the Letterboxd Top 50 of 2022, but Jack is recuperating. No updates, no major updates this week. But if you want some more data, by all means, check out Jack's episode with his 4 faves on this feed. It was a lot of fun. And we dig into the mid-year check-in for all of those top 25, top 50 check-in. So very fun episode. But now it's time for us to go to our own watch list. This is the big segment of the show. The big segment. Big, big, big. We go to our watch list the previous week. We shuffle. We have to watch that movie before we meet next. Mia, you shuffled Defending Your Life.
Yes. Yes. I got Defending Your Life. I really enjoy Albert Brooks as a writer, director, star, everything. This had been on my watch list for a long, long time. So glad to check it off. And I found this to be a really, really sweet, if not flawed, rom-com. There are some parts of it that don't fully make sense as to how he's being judged. I should say what the movie's about first.
Sure.
So for those who don't know about Defending Your Life, it is about a yuppie, Albert Brooks, who dies and goes to this kind of purgatory-esque land where he has to defend his life. And basically the powers that be figure out if he's ready to move on to the next step, it's not super clear what it is. It's not like heaven. It's just like, you kind of get to move on. And so it's like excruciating. He has to like show clips from his life on Earth to like this panel of judges. And I would be like in a ball rocking back and forth on the ground if I had to do that. Because you don't get to pick the clips. Like, they just, they're like, roll this clip from his life.
Game over for me.
It was really very philosophical, existential, very well written, very smart, witty. Meryl Streep character is not fleshed out super well. She's kind of a manic pixie dream girl that he meets, and all she really does is laugh at his jokes. That's kind of her whole character, is he says something funny and she laughs, and that's her personality. But other than that, again, I keep saying other than that.
Will you be drifting into the Albert Brooks filmography more after this?
I would love to, and I'd like to drift into the James L. Brooks filmography as well. They're not related. Did you know that?
James L. Brooks, the only reason I know James L. Brooks is from The Simpsons.
The Simpsons, exactly. Yeah. And I just always assumed they were related because Albert Brooks would be on. And so I was like, oh, they're brothers. Nope.
I need to get into the Albert Brooks. I need to dig into the Albert Brooks filmography as well. That's a blind spot for me.
Come on in. Finding Nemo.
I mean the directorial filmography.
He directed that, right?
So my shuffle from a few weeks back, since I was off last week, was Boyhood. Richard Linklater. This movie is like 5 stars from everyone and your mother. You walk down the street and you ask a rando, they'll say Boyhood, 5-star movie. I gave this 2.5 stars. So
go off.
Boyhood is famous for following this family over the course of 12 years. Like, literally, they filmed it over 12 years. So the young boy lead could age over the course of time. And Ethan Hawke is in it. He also ages. Patricia Arquette is the mother. They're divorced. But it's about this boy's journey over a period of 12 years growing up. I almost shut it off after 20 minutes. I like could not vibe at all with this movie. Almost DNF, the fabled letterbox DNF log job. So I started to like have a panic. I'm like, am I out of touch? I did like the Skinner meme. Am I out of touch?
No, it's the children.
It's the children who are out of touch. There's children who are wrong. But there was just a lot of scenes with like some, you know, non-actors that just were in this movie, went on for so long. It just took me out of it. I love the idea of the movie, but the execution was just completely not for me. Capital letters, not for me. One of my main callouts was, it's not that long ago, but remember trampolines without the walls, like the safety walls? Like every trampoline I see now with like young kids in my neighborhood, it's like a trampoline, but they have like those gated, you know, protector walls outside of the trampoline. So in this movie, it's like an old school trampoline. And I was like, oh my God, I cannot believe not that long ago we were all using trampolines without those walls. Like, it just seems so dangerous to me now that like, how do we all not have broken bones from being on a trampoline? It just blew my mind.
I should get a trampoline.
So I love School of Rock. I will say that. Yes. That was the last line of my review. Love School of Rock. Love Richard Linklater. Love the first of the Before trilogy. I haven't seen the rest. Just not for me. Mm. And that's okay sometimes, you know?
That's okay sometimes. It is for me. So I will take the Before trilogy off your hands. And I will love it. I will love it for you.
Thanks, everyone, for tagging your reviews. We can watch this. We love seeing so many reviews come through every week on Letterboxd with the tag, Paul watched Le Samurai. This film is very much my jam, a methodical and quiet hitman playing cat and mouse with bastard French cops. I was expecting a bit more action and obvious tension, but was treated to something different, yet still rewarding. The last 20 minutes were an absolute thrill. Great movie.
That is in my watch list as well, I believe.
It's
been in there. It has been in there.
Alain Delon. Yeah, it's on HBO Max and Criterion right now.
Wow, that is a beautiful man. Donal reviewed La Jetée, which is a classic, very important short. Packs a lot into 28 minutes and left me with the sense of having experienced something profound, which I couldn't say of 12 Monkeys. Oh, for those... 12 Monkeys is kind of like a... an adaptation of this beautiful French sci-fi, La Jetée for... Mm. Oh, they have a bonus Mad God review. This is awesome. Bonus Mad God review. Wallace and Vomit.
Well said.
Yeah, okay. I'm understanding now because it's stop motion and very gross. Okay, yes. That makes sense.
I did watch that. I don't think we've talked since I watched Mad God.
We haven't?
I have watched it. Yeah.
Yes, you did
I liked
watch
it a lot. Liked it a lot. 4 stars.
It
four
is stars for me. Crazy.
All right, let's go to our own watch list. It's shuffle time. I'm going to head to the watch list on the website here. I'm going to filter my watch list since I'm a pro member, stream only. And then I'm going to sort by shuffle. And the first movie is I have to watch before next week. Oh my God. 1980s alligator streaming on Shudder and Shout Factory. A baby alligator is flushed down a toilet and survives by eating discarded lab animals that have been injected with growth hormones. The now gigantic animal escapes the city's sewers and goes on a rampage, pursued by a cop and a big game hunter.
Whoa.
It's my time. It's my time to shine with
to
alligator.
Lyle Crocodile.
all right. So what did you get?
I got something delicious. Just scrumptious. I got Woman and the Dunes, 1964.
Wow.
Yes. Yes. Let me just real quick read the synopsis. An entomologist suffers extreme psychological and sexual torture after being taken captive by the residents of a poor seaside village. This is it's number 42 on our official top 250 narrative feature films list. So,
great.
Again, this is one that's been in there for a while. The poster is one of my favorite posters ever made.
This is a big check off the watch list, right?
This is huge. This is huge for me.
My friends do a Criterion podcast. It's called The Cinenauts. They go through the Criterion and watch movies related to whichever movie they pick. And they did an episode on this. Remember, that episode was very sexual.
Yeah, that's what I'm expecting, according to the synopsis that was about extreme psychological and sexual torture.
I get an alligator movie, and you get psychological sexual torture.
Yeah, you know. So we're going to have a really nice, carefree, nice core.
Soph has this as a 4.5. My God. Who knew that sand could be both terrifying and sexy?
Oh, God, they're going to do stuff in the sand. I don't know what they're going to do in the sand, but...
Thanks so much for listening to Weekend Watchlist, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. You can follow Mia, Slim, that's me, and our HQ page on Letterboxd using the links in our episode notes. And if you had an amazing time, just like we did just now, maybe consider rating the podcast on Spotify or leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps spread the word about the show.
Thank you so much to our crew, and thanks to Letterboxd member Trent Walton for the theme music, Eyes On. Thanks to Jack for the facts. Get well soon, Jack. And Sophie Shin for the episode transcript. And to you for listening. Weekend Watchlist is a Tape Deck production.
And I forgot to mention this, but thanks to Pocket Casts, my preferred listening app, they're featuring Tape Deck right now in the Discover section of the app. So all of our pods are spotlighted. It's really cool to see. Thank you, Pocket Cast.
Thank you, Pocket Cast. This is a Tape Deck podcast.